Welcome to Regenerative Spaces, a podcast that explores holistic and sustainable paths toward thriving in the fields of agriculture, education, spirituality, and beyond. Hey there, and welcome to Regenerative Spaces. I'm your host, Stacy Pellice. I'm a regenerative farmer in Santa Barbara, California, but my background and interests span a much broader range of fields, from psychology to spirituality and beyond. In my 3+ decades as an environmental activist, author, and educator, I've gotten increasingly curious about the links between the various ecosystems humans occupy. On this podcast, I'm inviting you to get curious with me. These episodes feature approachable conversations with inspiring experts in different disciplines, from intuitive healers, nonprofit founders, activists, and educators. We'll cover county politics, cattle ranching, and a whole world of other specialties in between. These folks are all at the forefront of their chosen fields, and each one offers a unique perspective on holistic, sustainable, and regenerative possibilities for our individual and collective lives. In today's episode, I introduce you to the incredible Maury Fontanez, a purpose and intuition coach who has transformed my life over the past year. To me, regenerative living is all about looking at things from a holistic viewpoint, considering the well-being of an entire organism or ecosystem. For humans, there's nothing more holistic than connecting our mind, body, and spirit. When we tap into our intuition, we connect with the most whole version of ourselves as human beings. Maury's going to guide us through her powerful methodology and even provide a glimpse into her coaching process as she works with me live on the show. Her insights and techniques are designed to help you tap into the wisdom of your soul and ignite a profound desire to live your truth more fully. So prepare to be amazed as we explore the transformative power of your intuition. Let's dive in. Hi, Maury. How are you today? I'm so glad that you're here with us.
Hi, Stacy. I am elated to be here with you.
Well, so I want to first say how I met you, just to kind of give a little context. And our mutual friend, Jennifer Freed, told me that she had met the most incredible woman who really was doing work with one's purpose, one's soul work, with one's intuition. And you were new in town. So I don't know. I trust her. So I called you immediately. And we had this great conversation. And then I ended up doing about 6 months of the best work I think I've ever done with you. And I learned so much. And I want to talk about that and the impact on my life because it's been large. But then eventually it was just like, we have to be friends. So yeah. Ever since then, you know, here we are. So right. We're going to try to keep this to the topic. But my point is I just have so much love, appreciation, and enthusiasm. And I feel like I'm doing what I'm doing partially because of your influence.
Oh, well,
so I just want to thank you publicly for that.
Thank you for saying that. And I say this, that, you know, there's some souls that come in to do this work with me that are so aligned to their higher selves immediately. And so come from this frequency of deep inner wisdom and connection to themselves and all else. And you are one of those people. So doing this work with you truly never felt like work. It was so energizing for me too, because you really get, you give what you get right in return.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to have to trust you on that one. I'm not that developed.
Okay,
but so tell us a little bit about where you've come from, because it's not been a straight path for most of us. And I love sharing that so other, you know, young people, medium people, older people can know. You don't have to know what you're going to be when you grow up.
So yes, I love that question.
Tell me about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I come from a background in PR and change management and crisis management. I worked on the agency side. So I worked for PR and marketing firms for about 20 years. I started my career in the entertainment space, helping, you know, really promote films and television shows and the talent there, and then really found my way into the world of crisis management and helping companies, CEOs, public personalities navigate public reputational issues, crises, things that you would read about them negatively or their companies in the press, and helping them to really figure out their pathway out. And, you know, I did this for, like I said, almost two decades until I really came to a point probably around 7 or 8 years ago where my soul, my higher self, as I call it, really started to knock at the door and say, wait a minute, is this really fulfilling you? Is there more to this than you're willing to look at? And I think my own fear of not doing it in this linear way really clouded my ability to hear that intuitive voice for a really long time, because I was conditioned, as we all are, that you make your money in a very linear manner. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, what was I thinking? I think I was the global head of strategy at the world's largest PR firm at that point.
Wow.
What kind of insane person would trade that in to go on some, you know, windy path that wasn't even really clear to me? All I knew was this, that when I was called in to help clients, particularly with really hairy issues, mm-hmm. I always just knew the answer really clearly. And when I would ask their team members, how did we end up here? They would say, I don't know, I had a feeling, but I never spoke up. And so with that little inkling, I decided that I really needed to use this gift that I have, which is to tap into my intuitive wisdom very easily, to teach other people how to tap into that intuitive wisdom, and left my agency career with two little kids as a single mom and kind of just leapt off this cliff and decided that I trusted my purpose and my higher self more than anything else. And, you know, 7 years later, I now have this really beautiful practice of helping people reunite with their higher selves and trust their inner wisdom and choose that wisdom over the need to conform or assimilate, which allows them to make higher frequency choices that allow them to thrive and the community around them to thrive simultaneously.
Wow. That takes a lot of courage to do what you did, because really, like, you had the tiger by the tail and right. you chose to listen to that voice inside. And it's interesting to me, because with my work in education, what I see is education can be a force of silencing those inner voices and that yes. higher self. So it really ties in incredibly. It makes a lot of sense to me, although I've never called it higher self. I've never understood that. I've heard that term. And I'm always thinking, like, what is that? What is higher self? So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. It's my favorite thing to talk about. You know, the first thing I'll say about higher self is that it's not a hierarchy. I don't use the word higher to say that there is a lower self. All that I mean by higher self is our most divine self. And you don't even have to be religious or spiritual to embrace that concept of divine self. The way that I say it is that we are made of stardust and we are made of earth. And so we are the conduit between those two things, the cosmos and the earth. And so we are constantly in process. We are in process of being our human selves, the selves that experience life in a very tangible way, which comes with experiencing pain, trauma, neglect, abuse, rejection, on and on. Those are human experiences that we hold. And on the other side, there is this higher self. Our self that is connected to deep, infinite wisdom, power, purpose, and love. And the reason that I call it higher self is just that that is the aspect of us that is not weighed down by the limitations of that human experience. So it allows us to imagine, it allows us to create, it allows us to push forward and thrive from a space of true embracing of our value and our magic and our connection to something much larger than just our own individual experience.
So I think what I'm hearing you say is there's somehow truth with a capital T that may come through with this other voice of yes. higher self, because it is connected to that universal or, you know, I study Taoism and nature, the universal energies are connected to that kind of divine, and there's more truth telling, whereas the human self inside, that mind, is actually based on a lot of beliefs, a lot of cultural ideas, traditions, and it can actually be right. somewhat less than the highest truth. But exactly somehow right. it's not about getting rid of our humanness. It's not. It's about somehow working with this higher self. Well, I love it. And I actually, you have shown me, we did a whole guided imagery piece around it and introduced me to this image that I can call up, and it is reliable. Yes. And I don't even have to know how it works, but could you possibly tell us a little bit for people who haven't had this experience? Could you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we go to meet our higher selves, it's really a way to listen. Our brains need evidence, and they need to visualize things in order to accept them. So as part of my practice, one of the things we will do when we are really ready to meet higher self is drop into a visualization where we will go somewhere that is meaningful or beautiful or generative in some way. Sometimes it's a forest, sometimes it's a desert. I really intuit kind of where that person will feel really connected to something mm-hmm. greater than themselves. And we will drop in, and 100% of the time, I've never had a client who doesn't see, mm-hmm. we will meet this aspect in a visual form. And, you know, some of my more cynical clients will say, well, am I imagining it? And I will say to that, and so what? Even if you're imagining it, which, by the way, all of our fears are also illusions. So you're imagining those as well.
Oh,
if it is giving you, if it is giving you powerful information that shifts your framework for existing in this lifetime in a way that allows you to thrive, in a way that allows you to love yourself and love others, then okay, what a powerful imagination you have. And to those that believe like I do, it is, and it's like a dream. It's like visiting an aspect of yourself that hasn't manifested in front of you in your day to day. But when you take the time and space to drop in, create silence, and go meet them there, they will show up and they will reveal themselves to you, and they could look like anything. But the point is that you are in communication with now a new aspect that your brain hadn't really recognized as real until this visitation or this visualization that allows you to attach it to an image.
This is a muscle that I've had to develop, I would say, that belief piece. And I love what you just said about our fears are made up too. And, you know, it's whatever we can conjure.
Yes.
And why not this? And I'm a big dreamer as well. And so the idea of working with dream images from a Jungian, Carl Jung absolutely did something active imagination. And that was hard to get comfortable with. And then you end up learning that you actually get somewhere, and who cares where it comes from? You may learn something. Yes. So I just want to say that I'm aware of that barrier to believability, and then just hanging it up and just saying, let's just go there and see where we get.
Yes. And, you know, we've heard this a million times. You'll have the accurate number here, but we only use what percentage of our brain?
It's low. Yeah. I don't have it, but it's low.
So in the tens or twenties of our brain, right?
Yes.
Which means that there is so much more happening that we are not processing. So the way that I look at this is that our consciousness is vast. Our human brain can take in a certain percentage of it so that we don't combust, because we have to logically understand the world that we're operating
in. Right, yeah.
And that this kind of visualization, visitation, is just accessing another few percentage points of your perception, of your brain, of being able to touch a part of your consciousness that your brain was formerly shut off to.
Wow. I mean, that's a big deal. That's, right? I mean, I only want that. I want more of my brain functioning, right? That makes me better.
Yes. Yes.
But how do I know I'm sitting here and there may be a few voices in my head? you know, not that I'm diagnosable, but, you know, how do I know the difference between one voice and another and which one to listen to? How do I know it's my higher and not my, you know, bad goofy? I like to think about good goofy and bad goofy, but like, how do I know?
I love that you asked that. That's a question from someone who's been through this work and now can distinguish between the voices. Yeah. So thank you for teeing that up. Yeah. So, you know, we are always in process. We are, you know, a lot of healers will talk to you about the figure eight, the infinity symbol. And in my work, the way that I see the infinity symbol or this process of the figure eight is that we go back and forth between our fear triggered self and our higher self 100 times a day. That we are constantly in this process of being our most divine, most powerful, most loving, purposeful self, and being our most triggered, afraid, limited self 100 times a day. And in my method, we're never trying to get rid of that triggered self. We're trying to be in the figure eight of it, in the flow of higher self to triggered self and back and forth, and just recognizing, like I said, because we're made of stardust and earth, we are the conduit to both things. So learning how to distinguish between that fear self and that higher self is the most unlocking way to access your higher self. Because what we have been trained to believe is that our fear voice is the only voice, that our limited beliefs are the only reality, and that there's nothing else out there. So when our fear voice says to us, don't take that risk because you won't be able to fund your life, don't make this decision, it's too risky, whatever it might be. It might even be for someone who has social anxiety, don't go to this party because these people will be scary, right?
Right.
Whatever that fear voice is saying, we've been trained to believe is the truth. What we need to understand is there's another aspect of us that's also communicating truth. So we need to learn to distinguish between the two voices. And the way that I teach that is to recognize the emotional signature that comes with each.
One is trying to keep us safe is what, that's what I was feeling. It's like, okay, but that scary one is trying to keep me safe. Shouldn't I listen to that one? Totally. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. And it's trying to keep you safe. And if safe is your goal, if stagnation is your goal, then you should listen to it.
Thank you.
But if this is about growth and expansion into your most aligned, powerful self, then we have to consider the other voice on the other end of this infinity symbol. So when I say telling the difference comes down to understanding the emotional signature, think of a thought right now that comes from that fear voice. Can you think of something?
Well,
not to put you on the spot.
Yes, because what I think about every day is I want to get some animals. I want to get some sheep.
Oh, okay. Great. Let's use this
like
as an example.
Every day.
Okay. Awesome. So this is a great example. So we want to get some sheep. What does the contracted, the fear voice say about that?
That I'm so excited and I see all this plant material that they should graze. It'll be so good. The negative side is I haven't thought all the way through it. I don't have enough people to help take care of it. I don't have all the information. It's going to create a problem and a drag on the system at a time. There's higher priorities. There's a lot of words from that other voice, aren't there?
It's because it's been trained to take center stage. Great. So let's hold that thought now. I have other priorities. I don't have the infrastructure. This is going to drain our energy. Just hold that thought. Mm-hmm. How does that thought feel emotionally?
It makes me emotionally, makes me feel tight. It makes me a little anxious, actually. It does. Okay. It makes me go for a couple reasons. One, because I don't like that answer. And the other one is something, it's like what's on the other side of all those words is something bad's going to happen. You know, there's some fear, something bad. And it's not even that clear what that would be.
Okay. So the emotion is anxiety. And then you pointed to this. How does it feel in your body, that thought?
Tight. I feel contracted tight here. Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Now you're just going to take a really cleansing breath. And you're just going to invite the most expansive, divine wise part of you into the conversation. Or a more simple way to put it is, we're going to ask your intuition. Go ahead and ask your intuition or your higher self or your expanded self, I want to bring in these sheep. What do you get?
I get that it's really, my husband doesn't really want them right now. And it's really not that scary. It really isn't. And P.S., okay. The land, when we rented sheep last year, the land loved it. And so actually there's a lot of good. There's a lot of pull. It's not just me wanting them. There's more pull. So I have, there's a lot of energy coming from the land wanting it. So I think it actually could work out pretty well if I just did a small.
Yes. So look at what your expanded self can do, just quickly to point out. It went from this myopic view of self to boom, all of a sudden considering the land as well. This is what our expanded self is capable of. It can hold multiple realities at once. What's best for you and what's best for all else. When that thought came in, the land wants this. And oh, by the way, this isn't your fear. What emotion came with that?
Well, I felt it. I felt an up energy and I felt an excited. I'm really excited. I really want them. Sorry. Okay, is that a so whining?
You felt excited. You felt your energy went up. Great.
Yes. Yes.
And also I might be planting a seed here. You can tell me if that's wrong. The knowing this is your husband's fear and this is good for the land actually has no emotional signature to it. It's just neutral information.
Right.
Right. So the fear voice has anxiety and a down energy with it. Mm-hmm. The higher self, the intuitive voice, has emotionally neutral information that is energizing. And lastly, how did that answer feel in your body?
The answer that of you can have them.
Yeah, or it's good for the land and this is your husband's fear, not your own.
How did that feel in your body? Well, it's good for the land gets me excited in the most excited way. And the fact that my husband isn't ready yet. I'm just going to say ready yet. Yeah. It just was a fact. It was just a thing. It was just a thing. Fact. And it didn't feel like I'm not mad. I'm not any of those things. It just felt like a fact.
A fact. No emotion. What happens to the contraction in your chest? Is it there?
Gone.
So that's how you tell the difference between the voice that's trying to protect you, the fear voice, the limited self, and your higher self. The fear voice, the limited self, is going to feel draining. It's going to have an emotional signature to it, sad, mad, anxious, and it's going to feel like a contraction in your body because it is literally asking you to contract, to limit yourself. Your higher self, your intuitive self, is going to be factual, emotionally neutral information. It's going to feel energizing and it is going to feel like expansion in your body.
So would you say that we all walk around limiting ourselves a fair amount based on these voices? Because, wow. Because isn't that a survival mechanism that our brain just has? It's like, the bias is towards the negative and, you know, scan for trouble kind of thing.
Negative bias, absolutely, is part of our genetics because we had to be so vigilant to survive. So there is a thing in our species saying you have to be vigilant to survive. Then you layer on top of that the culture that has taught us that negative information is intelligence, is vigilance, right? Like if you turn on the news and you want to be educated, you're just hearing bad news. There's also good things happening in the world, but that's not really what we are taught is news. News is negative information. Right. Then you have the world of capitalism that's trying to sell you something by convincing you that you're lacking something. So then the negativity bias is further underlined by saying, oh, you know what? You're not enough as you're aging. So you should probably buy this cream. Mm-hmm. It's still this playing on this negativity bias that is inherent to our species. Mm. But what I say is that while the species wants to survive, we cannot expand from survival mode. We have to also want to thrive. So we need to be in balance in this conversation between the survival aspect and the one that wants us to thrive, which is higher self.
That is really something that we don't talk about enough, in my opinion, in our broader conversations, the bigger conversations. Yeah. I mean, you hear about it in terms of, you know, the gross national profit or the economy or things like that, but well-being or our personal selves, I'm not hearing enough about that. And yet that's what regeneration is about, is like, how do we turn toward a more thriving, positive life force? And it's for me, in my experience, I just want to say and share that it absolutely had an effect of creating myself as a whole. So I found it very holistic work. I just want to name that, is that I did a little bit of IFS with a really brilliant woman named Amy, and that internal family systems where all the characters inside, and I feel like the work that you did with me and maybe the work that you do in general has elements of that where...
Absolutely.
And it reminds me of regenerative farming, because it's like, you're not trying to get rid of the bad voices. You're not trying to chase them away, get rid of the bad guys so that you can only have a good guy in the middle. No, that we know leads to depletion and, you know, not good things. You want to bring them all in and welcome everyone. Could you speak to that a little bit about the selves?
Yes. And we don't want to label them as bad, because in fact, look at what they're trying to do. They're working so hard to protect us. That's not bad.
Right.
That is such a... honorable job that they have, that they are stuck in doing, that is draining and exhausting for them. But they do it because they love us. So they're not bad. They're lovely beings. They're lovely aspects within our internal family system, within our system of humanity, that's just trying to do a job it thinks it needs to do, which is to protect, which is why in my method I say there is no aspect to us that's disposable, not even the shame aspect that is loud and proud in all of us. Even that shame aspect is not disposable. What it wants is to become a part of the dialogue. And what it's waiting for is for some parental figure, higher self, some enlightened being, higher self, to be in dialogue with it. And to say, not what should I do? Because the shame, the fear, the limited self, these are all much younger parts of us, by the way, who devise these strategies at very young ages. And what we do is we put them in the driver's seat and we say, drive. Should I go left? Should I go right? And these little kids who are our fear selves are trying to drive the car. They don't want to drive the car. Their job is actually just to say what we need or what they need. So instead of taking direction from these fear voices that are trying to protect us, the reframe is, I'm not going to do what you're saying, but I am going to ask you, what are you really needing? What do you need? And therefore, you're asking me to do it this way. And you'll always get some version of belonging, safety, or dignity.
One of those three. So that's what it kind of boils down to, those three.
Always.
And then is it usually some aspect of self that you really did live through? Like, oh, that was my 13-year-old and she was scared in... big groups. I remember I was in a big group and you and I spoke and I was like, wow, I'm really shut down. I don't know what's going on. And it's like, okay, let's talk to her.
Yeah. And when you were in a big group and we had a session that day and we found instead of current Stacy, we found a 13-year-old.
Right. Yeah.
Who felt like it left out or misunderstood or whatever it might be. We all have these aspects, which is why I say, let's not call them bad guys. They're just little kids.
Right.
And they're just stuck. They're stuck in that moment of isolation, rejection, neglect, whatever it is. And they've devised a strategy to survive, which is contract. That's all they're doing. They're just replaying the same movie that served them in that moment over and over and over again. And so instead of saying, you're bad, you're not enough, you're hurting me, what we need to say is, thank you for trying to protect me. What do you really need? And then they tell you the need and we offer that need up to higher self. And higher self says, guess what? I have a much faster strategy to get that need met than the one that your limited self has created.
Well, that is just so beautiful, loving, compassionate. And it actually echoes some of the Buddhist learning I've had where that inner self, and one of my teachers talks about a pain identity. And there's a whole story that goes with that. But that through giving our attention, our awareness, you know, the light and the warmth of our own attention that comes from that higher self. It's interesting how different traditions may teach similar things. Yes. And that reminds me, I just wanted to touch in because I was aware from an early point that you are Persian. You come from a Persian culture. Yes. And I just really want to know how that has informed who you are and how you heal, let's say.
Yeah, that's a beautiful question. You know, I won't say that any of these healing traditions were passed down to me from ancient Persian healing arts. I wish that were true. It's more actually about the organic way that Persian family systems love and support one another and how ingrained we are in each other's existence. And how much we care about each other's existence. And so I think that for me, it was a couple of things. I think that our Persian culture is one of the collective, and it is one of true warmth and connection. And so I think that I've learned about not disposing of any aspect of me or you because we don't dispose of each other in my culture. We are always kind of in the collective. We don't value individualism over the collective in our culture.
Right.
Which, by the way, can be very hard to be an Iranian American teenager trying to create boundaries, because what you get is a lot of guilt about choosing yourself over the collective. So any aspect, even the most loving aspect, can have a shadow side to it.
Oh my gosh. Right? Yeah. And you have a teenage daughter right now.
I have a teenage daughter myself. Yeah. I'm trying not to do that to her. So there's that aspect of it, of the Persian culture that I feel really lucky to have been brought up in. And then there's just the way that my grandmother and my mother just function. My mother and my grandmother has passed, human beings. My grandmother, a deeply spiritual person. Who I really feel like handed this baton down to me. And she did it through love. Her superpower was love. She could love anyone. And I really believe that, you know, right now we're in such a time of divisiveness that the only answer to that division is love. And so much of her loving spiritual energy is just a part of what I do. And I really do give that to her. That's her. She passed it to me. And now I'm living that purpose.
Wow. That's so great. I love hearing. What's her name?
Well, we called her Aziz Jun, which means dear one.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, it's funny because as you're speaking, I realize love is really what you give and it's also what you teach. It really is. And that.
Yes.
Yes. And that's at the core of my work as well. You know, everywhere we go. I mean, that's the only thing really that heals.
Yes. I think that's why you and I were like electromagnetic rays attracted to each other, or whatever you will call it, but like magnets, because that is also your purpose. And that is also what you emanate. And I think that's why we quickly went from client, coach to friend, because it was like, no, we're vibing at this same frequency of emanating love out into the world and embodying love and wanting to invite everyone else in instead of, you know, push people out.
Well, I think, yeah, that feels true to me. And the idea that one energy resonates with others with that energy. So that gives a lot of explanation to why it's important that we keep our own, we do that self-care and that we take care of these inner figures, these inner characters. So if someone doesn't have the opportunity to do one-on-one with you, what's the next, you know, what's the next best thing? I mean, you've got a book coming out.
I am very excited. Well, yeah, but I've been talking about this book forever. It doesn't come out until February 2025. And it's going to be called The All-Knowing You. But until then, I do a couple of things. I have my own podcast. It's called Signal with Maury and Melissa, with my best friend Melissa. And I'm there talking about all these esoteric metaphysical things. And there she is, just like really showing the human experience of the cynicism, the joking. You know, she really adds that counterbalance. So Signal with Maury and Melissa is our our podcast. And then I'm on Instagram at Maury Fontanez, and I'm making videos, you know, all the time, sharing as much of this wisdom, because I do want to democratize it. And I want everyone to feel the ripple effect of this work.
Yeah, I appreciate that so much. And you are really generous with your posts and what you put out. Yeah. And you and Melissa are adorable, and you are having so much fun. It's like, I want to come. Yeah.
I know. It almost doesn't feel fair that we can have this much fun and make something so impactful, but
yeah. But it, you know, for some of us that we're not raised with this, it's like, it takes a lot of repetition to hear it and practice it and be reminded. And even just on a daily basis, because it's when I'm contracted that I may not remember to do these practices, you know, is what I find.
You need people around you who remind you of your expanded self. So you are one of, or as our friend Jennifer says, your sacred crew, right? You need fountains, not drains, as she always says. Mm-hmm. You are one of those people for me. So even 2 weeks ago or last week, I was in my contracted self, and you were the first person I called, and you were very easily able to just hold up a mirror and be like, hold on, let's just look at higher self here for a minute. And, you know, instantaneously, I told you, I felt better. So I will say, you know, the thing to leave with, besides everything we just talked about, is just look at your circle. And, you know, are you with people who see you and treat you as your higher self? That is who you need around you, so that you can constantly be reminded, because you will always be both your triggered self and your higher self. And you need people in those moments to remind you of your greatness.
Mm. That is like, tattoo that on my arm. You know, and there's this part of me that wants to keep chipping away at that, because I feel that I was raised in a culture and maybe a family that it's like, who do you think you are? Like, if I want to really listen to that higher self, it's like, dare I? Because that's selfish. That's you being full of yourself. I mean, these are interesting terms, right? But there's a lot of resistance. Like, can I just do that? You know, even like my son came home, Mom, you should do a podcast. It's like, what? You know?
Yeah.
It's like, let me think of a reason why I can't. Well, there isn't one.
No.
But it's, it's cultural. I think
it's cultural. It's family systems.
I
think that you know this because we did this in the work, but every time you hit a limiting belief system, I mean, one of the first questions I want you to ask yourself is, whose belief is this? Because those beliefs are invasive species. Those are not organic to your system, to use your language.
Uh-huh.
They are, they're bacteria. Wow. They've been implanted in you by someone else who needed to have that belief as a form of protection for themselves. And sometimes they implant these limiting beliefs as an act of love. They're saying, this is what protected me, so I'm going to give this to you so that you can remain protected. But when they do that, they're just handing their limitations over to us. And then we have to see the world through their very myopic view of the world. They're not trying to harm us most of the time. They're trying to help us to survive. But we're often seeing the world through the lens of their limitations. And I think one of the things that you can do when those beliefs come up is just ask, who does this serve?
Right.
Who does this belief actually serve?
Right.
If there is any belief that says you have to silence yourself, you have to contract yourself, you have to be smaller, you have to reach for less, then it is serving a system that wants to oppress you.
Right.
Full
stop. Makes sense. That makes sense. For some other reason that maybe they do or maybe they don't know why.
Right. Correct.
And I don't know if you saw my mouth hanging open a minute ago, but you said a couple things, because I'm constantly finding analogies as I've gotten deeper into the land practices. I find more and more analogies. So you just said something that sounds to me, and tell me if I'm right or wrong, that like a toxic belief, and there may be such a thing, I don't know what you would call it, but a toxic belief that says you can't, you are not good enough, or any of those things you might say are geared to kill off something growing in the garden that somebody is afraid is going to grow. That really, what we're learning in agriculture, let's say, is that by killing off the things we don't love, because maybe they aren't, it's actually better to grow more things. It's just like, bring all the things in, the diversity of plantings, more. If you got an insect, bring more in, because guess what? This one eats that one, eats that one, and then you'll be in balance. And so in balance is more the goal, not perfection, which would be a very lonely prospect. It's sort of a monoculture prospect. Only the good one is going to sit there alone inside, and you're going to kill off all the others. But that's exactly what I'm hearing. Does that resonate? I mean, am I making sense?
100. Listen, I think that all of this is such truth with a capital T that it applies to every system, including nature. And I think that nature is the greatest teacher. So thank you for bringing that in, because that's 100% true. It's what I'm saying. We're not going to kill off these parts of us, nor should we. We need to be in balance. Right. And when there is an invasive species, it's not about attacking it. It's about giving it loving attention to understand what are you trying to do here? And in trying to understand what are you trying to do here and understand its needs, you are doing, as you're saying, which is inviting more of it in, but more of its truth, not its limitation, its truth. Here's the need I'm trying to take care of.
Right. Wow. Okay. This is taking some convincing for me, interestingly, this idea of inviting all the parts and turning with love towards the parts that I have learned to not take kindly to, which I'm not proud to say, even with the work,
I think,
you know?
Yeah. A lot of us are taught that shame is our best strategy. And that's just inherent in the way that we function. And it's okay to feel like those parts of us don't have any place. And this is what I say. One of the things people ask me, what's your pet peeve? It's toxic positivity. It's love and light healing. I really think that I stand in direct opposition to that kind of message, because it is not real. It is not fair. It is judgmental. It's colonial.
Yeah.
It demands.
It's impossible.
Yeah. It demands a perfection that is bullshit. Can I say that?
Mm-hmm. On my show. Yeah.
And yeah. So I think that, it is okay that you're finding it hard. It is actually such an artifact of being raised, all of us, to believe that we have to have shame about our bad, our dark shadow sides.
Right. Well, and you're naming it, because I was raised with toxic positivity. That was the actual practices of, you know, of one side of my family. It was all about, if something bad's happening, you're not affirming properly. You're not visualizing positively enough. It was that whole world way long before, you know, it's popular now in some circles as well. And so if you're, you know, if you get a cold, it must be a thought you had or something you did.
Don't you think those generations needed that survival strategy, because it was dire?
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. Yeah.
If I think that's about what I mean about. Yeah, there's a survival strategy. My mom is the same way. God love her. It's all about positive energy, to the point where sometimes I'm like, you look sad. And she's like, I'm not sad. And it's like,
okay, oh my God.
Fine.
And it made both of us like desperate to find the darkness.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. But that is what I mean about sometimes they have to devise strategies to survive their conditions. My mom was an immigrant. Like, you have to hold on to the positive, or else you're going to drown in the difficulty of that moment. But when she passes that on to me as a belief system, it's an invasive species, because I'm not an immigrant. I'm not going through the same thing she is.
No.
I'm ready to grow and thrive. And that's limiting me.
Right. Well, it's interesting too, that in both cases, it's our mothers. My mom was a surprise baby during the middle of the Depression. And, you know, there was hard things. And so,
yes.
How are you? Perfect. Is the answer.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was a lot to live up to.
I mean, the fact that she survived is a miracle.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's still kicking in a good way. Beautifully kicking. But here's what she is. She's actually sweet as hell. But I want to ask, okay, are you psychic? And can you tell us what that means? And, you know, because I was in the closet about all this stuff or confused about it for so long. And so help me with this.
Listen, you know, that word has so much cultural baggage with it. Psychic to me means the ability to receive information from sources that are not manifest in a human body. And if that is your question, then yes, I am constantly receiving information from unseen sources, whatever you want to call them. It took me a long time to admit that, because there's so much weight and negativity and like insanity that comes with that word. I mean, they were burning us at the stake for hundreds of thousands of years for that. So I think that the answer is yes, but I think I would encourage everyone to really examine your belief systems about that word psychic.
Right. I mean, it conjures up a crystal ball, maybe a little witch's hat, perhaps. Is that the same as intuitive? And it feels more comfortable to say intuitive for me. Yeah. I mean, I said psychic for a reason, because I think it's a little strong as a term, but I think I sometimes will use intuitive and I feel comfortable saying it.
Okay. So here's the distinction I'm going to make. For me, it is the same. I think that where people get caught up is that intuitive feels like information that is coming through so organically and gently for you to steer you in a positive direction. So intuitive doesn't often mean that you're intuiting some clear outcome about something. It's not like you, although sometimes, because I've looked into intuition, obviously I ask everyone about it. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it's like, do not go down that road, right? Yes. That is a form of predicting an outcome, which is what psychics do. They predict an outcome. So if we get hung up on intuitive and psychic being different, I think it's because intuition feels smaller or more organic or more in the day-to-day in terms of the information we're getting, and maybe not as predictive or, you know, exclamatory as psychic information can feel. So that's one distinction. The other is intuition comes from what I'm saying is our higher self, but there is multiple channels of information that you can get intuition from. You can be in conversation with the trees. You can be in conversation with people who have passed. You can be in conversation with more divine energies that have never been embodied. I mean, there's so much conversation that I don't think our human brains can really wrap themselves around where this information is coming from.
Okay. And that was going to be one of my questions, is how many places do we get intuition from? Is it also the same thing as higher self? Are there any other characters besides higher self? I mean, we talked about some of those younger selves that are in there and that may have an emotional or trauma piece of information. Besides that, I'm trying to think of a name of one of another kind, like, oh, your spirit guide or something.
Yes.
I mean, are these...
That's a good question.
You know? Yeah.
Intuition is the language of your higher self. That's why it feels so organic to you. Because it is you.
Okay.
And it's communicating to you through intuition. Receiving messages from other entities is where I think psychic becomes slightly different. Because there are, you know, other, like I said, forms of energy around us that are communicating to us. So I would say your intuition is your higher self whispering to you what you need to do and how you need to think so that you can thrive. But if you can hear that, then it's probably likely you can hear the other forms of communication if you're open to them. So often one thing you'll find is someone who's had a loved one pass will receive communication from that loved one, whether it's in the form of a butterfly fluttering by and they said, if you see a butterfly, it's me, or getting a thought, or, you know, you hear a lot of these stories of like they're about to be in harm's way and they're pulled out of harm's way suddenly. That's communication with an energy that used to be in the human form, and we can experience it right after that loved one has died because we're open to it. So if we were all open to it, we would all be psychic.
Okay. And so this is something I love to ask too, is we're all capable. We're all have the capacity.
Yes.
We're all born, in your opinion, with this as our natural senses. Well, like you look at animals, we are animals and they don't use language and they don't use certain other things. And so they have communication. And so... Yes. Everyone has this capacity?
Absolutely. Everyone has this capacity. We just have been taught a lot of things about it. So we shut ourselves off to it. And when I say everyone has this capacity, I don't mean everyone is meant to be a psychic that's giving other people readings or a healer or a, right? I just mean, again, going back to only using 20% of our brains, don't quote me on that. There's just so much more happening that if we can open ourselves up to, we will perceive it. And when you perceive it, then it's real.
Wow. Okay. That somehow, maybe you said something really important there because my brain did a little spin. When you believe it, is that what you said? You'll perceive it. Is that what you said?
Yes. Or as my modern world history teacher used to say in high school, if you believe it, it is true.
Okay. This makes me think about the country we live in right now. And there's a lot of people that believe things that are true in their own little space that they live in.
That's right. That's right. That's why shaming them is not the answer, because they genuinely are experiencing life through that lens and it is therefore their reality. Why? Because their world is so contracted, they are not able to see a world outside of that world. They are missing connection to the larger human experience. So because they perceive it, it has become their reality. It is true for them.
Right.
They don't believe that they're living in an illusion. They believe it is reality. And there is no convincing someone who's perceiving something some way that it's not real when that's what they're seeing.
So it sounds like we're doomed because with technology, I mean, by that measure, it sounds like, how are we going to come through this if we're so isolated by the fact that, you know, our selection process of what we receive is so further and further refining what we get, you know, I don't get the whole world unless I try to find the world. So
yes, that is so true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're living in a massive echo chamber of our own ideas and thoughts being reflected back to us. You know, I think that it's incumbent on those of us that see things from a more expanded perspective, that are connected to humanity, that understand that we are all connected, to model a loving approach and not a hateful, shaming approach in response. And I think that where we're failing is our judgment around those younger souls who are afraid and are coming from fear and therefore hatred. Because the more that we see them as other and judge them as other, then we're just actually doing more of the same. Ourselves. And yeah. That's creating more division. Now, I get this question from people. So does that mean that I need to love, you know, a Nazi sympathizer? No, you don't need to love their beliefs. You don't need to love the way they're operating in the world, but I am asking you to find the human heartbeat beneath it and not dispose of them altogether, because that kind of disposability is what makes them not human. And the more we see each other as not human, the more we're adding to this drain that's happening in our collective energy.
Right. And we're willing to do anything to someone that we don't feel has, you know, a heart like we do.
That's right.
They're not like us. Yeah.
Right.
Right. And so for me, this notion that, you know, with the state of the planet as it is right now, it really feels like getting more connection and just understanding that we all live under the same sun and moon and live on the same planet. It's like that to me is my baseline, what I'm trying to get to. And how, you know, so I will tell you that there are certain ways I've had to retrain my own perception. So I'm going to tell you, this is like a silly one, but I think it can also be a metaphor. Everything seems to be lately is that when I used to drive on this ranch, you would see avocado trees. And now you see avocado trees with a lot of greenery around it and underneath it. And that would have looked like a not well-kept ranch. That's not a good orchard. That's a messy orchard. Somebody's not paying attention, because everything literally is a weed. Anything green that grows in an orchard is a weed. when now uh-huh. I'm learning that there are certain things you can intentionally put that actually lend nitrogen and, you know, potassium, all these different things the trees need, there is a mutuality to them. And so, but it's literally been a years long struggle in adjusting my own knee-jerk perceptions.
Yeah, right. Because we need things to be disposable. We are in such the binary that things need to either be good or bad, valuable or disposable. And we don't know how to navigate the complexity of that in-between space.
So what would you advise when I get into, I mean, because you were saying more and more, it's harder to see, you know, myself in the binary. And it's like, I'm having the same experience internally. Yeah. I feel like I feel non-binary in a lot of ways, you know,
right.
But then I'm not, you know, yeah. So there's that, but like, how can you advise us? How can you help us with this, given your wisdom and how you consult and coach with folks?
Yeah, I would say, you know, get comfortable with these parts of yourself and allow them to be in dialogue. I really think that if we can honor and respect the selves that are trying to protect instead of making them out to be the bad guys, and at the same time, open ourselves up to meeting or reuniting with our higher selves and being in that dialogue, create that space, create that couple of minutes of quiet. Sometimes if you just put your hand on your heart and you sit there with your eyes closed, you get the communication. You know, take the deep breath, take a moment, come back to yourself, yourself being your triggered parts and your higher self, and allow that flow to happen within you so that you can extend that flow to the world. But when you're contracted, then you're just going to create more contraction around you. So start with this inner world and then allow the ripple effect of this inner world to do what it just inevitably will do in our outer world.
Which basically means, I mean, this overused, you know, oxygen mask on yourself first.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, self-care heals the world.
Right.
Which our friend Prune said, I have in my notes.
Beautiful.
Yes. And what I heard when I was healing on this ranch was that climate change is an inside job.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to understand what that meant, it's like, oh, I have to heal this ecosystem before I can even think about. And, you know, my next move was this ranch, this land.
Right. Right.
Okay. So have you ever, because you know how much I love this land, have you ever gotten communication from the land?
Absolutely. I get communication from the land in a couple ways. If I'm in a place where there are a lot of trees, so my husband's from Lake Tahoe, the California side, I always have to say. That place communicates to me really clearly. The mountains communicate very clearly to me. I grew up in Colorado for, you know, the formative part of my younger years. And so I get a lot of communication of deep peace and wisdom and unity from those trees in the mountains. The other way that I can get communication from the land is if something terrible has happened on the land. And I will just know, you know, I'll step on, we lived in Maryland for a very long time. And obviously, you know, that place, Maryland being on the Mason-Dixon line, is such a complicated space. Mm-hmm. And so there would be times where I would just step on to what is now a really cute restaurant and be like, whoa, I feel like I'm choking. I feel like I can't breathe. And, you know, that's really about all of the harm that was done to Black bodies and to slaves on that land. You know, places like Virginia and other places can be hard for me because the land, you know, is holding some of that trauma.
Wow. How did you figure that out? What was happening? Because I'm guessing this must have happened to you when you were young. Was that explained to you or?
No, I did not know what was happening when I was young. I was just thought that I was a scaredy cat. Honestly, I just thought, oh, I'm afraid of a lot of things. And so I need to be, I was very attached to my mom. I still am, as you know, you've met her a couple times now. And so it would be about like, oh, I need to be near my mom. I would interpret it that way because I didn't understand what was happening. And then I, you know, I met my mentor and teacher and incredible channel and intuitive, Rhea, who you know, and, you know, I've been working with her for 15 years, and she really taught me about my own experience as a sensing being and what I'm sensing, and allowed me to cultivate that knowledge. And so then also taught me how to have boundaries in those situations.
Wow. Yes. We love Rhea. Yeah.
Yes.
And I think this is a gift. I'm really glad this came up, because I would say I had that too. I mean, I had different things. Mm-hmm. My kids, I had better awareness. So when they had things happen, I didn't have to chase it away. When my son started talking about past lives of his, I had kind of like a, really? But then I knew better than to just to let him talk. Or when my daughter saw, oh, there's a little girl at the window, and it was kind of like, oh, what's she wearing? And I'm like, that's not where I came from. I always
Me
say,
I can't,
you know, I'm from Orange County, and we don't know about that. But I have had to, I learned from my kids. And then gradually just life has shown me, and experiences I've had. But I think that's what I would encourage, is if you have like, and I have to encourage myself this, when something is going on for me, is give myself the benefit of the doubt, and also say, number one, maybe it's not me. Maybe there's something in the space or another person.
Yes.
Or, I mean, that's a big deal for me. I'm still working that through.
Oh, I mean, this,
yeah,
this example I gave you about calling you a couple of weeks ago, it's like, I need you to remind me, no, you're a sensing being. You are sensing something rather than what I was doing, which was gaslighting myself, because I've been taught to gaslight the part of me that is sensing. And again, out of a place of protection, you know, my mom was like, no, that is not real, because it was scary.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Because I was fantasizing that maybe you wanted to be near her because she believed you.
No.
No.
I wanted to be near her because I was trained to believe that she was the only safety I had.
Okay.
And she, in many ways, was the only safety. I was raised just by her.
Right.
So, you know, when you're in a single parent household, they are your entire life raft.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So in that way, how does she feel with this now? Like, how is she? Have you brought her? I mean, she's lovely. Your mother is lovely.
Yeah.
But
we've come a long, long way. My mom, ultimately, I will say, has always just had so much faith in me. Like, I would just, the most preposterous things, my mom would be like, okay, you'll be good at that. So I think that with this, when I was like, hey, I'm going to leave this really, really successful career that I devoted my life to, where I'm making a very good salary, to go do this kind of work, she was like, you're going to do great. And it was, I think she has more belief in me than she does in any of the rest of this stuff, right? But she, there's been things that I've intuited for her that just ended up being right. And so I think she's definitely come full circle on it.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And I have to ask, how about kids? I mean, because we're looking at this generationally, do you think the young people get this, or?
You know, all kids are at their most potent and intuitive and sensing when they're young. So I, like you, really encouraged that in them. I talked to them a lot about how they just know. Like, you know, when they don't feel like they know, or they're in a fight with their friends, or they think this person, it's like, what do you know? You know. My youngest is very intuitive, and he can sense a lot of things. And so we do have a lot of conversations about just practically, what is that? Is it here to harm you? Is it here to help you? And, you know, now they're in their teen years where they have to reject anything and everything that comes from their parent.
Right.
So the conversation in my house is a lot of ridiculing intuition and purpose. And I recognize that they have to do that to individuate. And I just have to trust that they have the kernels of trusting themselves and their own intuition deep within them. And when they're done pushing this teaching away, they'll come back to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they're both beautiful and gifted and amazing. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I have faith that this next generation, maybe it's an intuition, is going to have more facility with this. I think they already understand the connection to nature. You know, the students that I just introduced you to, it's like, they get it. They value it. They know that that's what's up. And so yeah. That actually, whether it's rational or not, that makes me have hope for the future.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I'm in a blended family. I have two stepsons as well. And they are also such deeply sensing, intuitive beings. And, you know, to watch my 15-year-old stepson, you know, operate the way he does as a freshman in high school and still be so open to being such a sensitive human, just gives me so much hope. Like, he doesn't have to perform any of this toxic masculinity. He's open to the way that he senses. And I that gives me hope too, just watching the four of them and how comfortable they are in who they are, in a way that I never could be, gives me a ton of hope.
Well, on that note, I just want to say that you give me so much hope and so many tools and so much love. And so thank you for being you and doing what you do.
Thank you. And thank you for what you do. I really feel like you have such a massive purpose on this planet right now. And I'm just so happy that you've chosen to come back again and do this work in this lifetime. And just to call you such a good, close, dear friend who's always at my back. So thank you.
Thank you. Mwah. That's a wrap for today's episode of Regenerative Spaces. If you found this episode valuable or thought-provoking, share it with a friend and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'll keep the conversation going over on Instagram, so join me at Stacy Pellice and share your thoughts, questions, or suggestions for future episodes. I love hearing from you. And before we go, your support means the world to me. If you have a moment, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts to help us reach even more people looking to spark sustainable change in our world. Stay curious, stay inspired, and until next time, this is Stacy Pellice, and you've been listening to Regenerative Spaces.